All right. Welcome to the Cow Talk Show. I'm your host, Julie Forbes.
Moo.
Oh, April Fools.
Moo on over. It's time for Cow Talk.
Cow Talk. All about all cow all the time. Happy April Fool's Day. I remember one year, one of my roommates, when I was in college, died with animal safe dye, dyed my dog blue, and put sparkles on, or what is it called, confetti or something like that on him. April Fools.
Did he like that?
No. Well, I don't think he really cared. He was more interested in my reaction, I think. So today we have a guest talking about 4-H, which I'm really excited to talk about. We have Don Gregory on with 4-H and gonna learn a lot. I'm excited to learn a lot about what they do with their program with youth and specifically their dog program. So we will talk with Don after the first segment.
That'll be fascinating because a lot of us only know 4-H from when we visit the fair and then we see those little green signs and, you know, sometimes dogs wearing little green outfits. I don't know what they're called, but you know what I'm talking about. The little vests, you know.
And I think of it more as like a livestock thing. And I know they do a lot just agriculturally in general. But
that fits right in with Cow Talk. So
exactly.
It's perfect.
Yeah, we'll be talking about that next week during Cow Talk. But I've got just so much to talk about, but I guess I'll just have to choose a few things. One thing I was thinking about, and I've thought about this quite a bit, but this is going to be an opportunity for somebody out there who is brave and secure enough to call in and give us your dog voice. Because I was thinking about how I talk to my dogs sometimes, and sometimes how I even embarrass myself when I'm alone and it's just them, and I even will feel self-conscious just for myself because I'll be like, oh man, I'm really starting to lose it with how I'm talking to them. And
so how you talk to your dog, your impression of your dog,
right? Not your which in there sometimes there's similarities. Sometimes how we talk to our dogs will turn into what we make up as their dog voice. But I'm interested in the voice that you use to talk to your dog when it starts to get really wacky, like questionable. So if you can call in and give us your dog, the voice you use to talk to your dog when you are just overflowing with love and affection for them, then I will mail you a gift certificate to Urban Beast. Also, please feel free to call in if you have just a question about training behavior or nutrition. And that number is 425-373-5527. 425-373-5527. Feel free to give us a call anytime now. Also, toll-free in Western Washington, 888-298-5569.
And, of course, if you've got a question for our guest, Don Gregory, about 4-H, that would be great.
Absolutely.
And we'll say, who's a good caller? Who is a good caller?
Oh, man, I don't even think that I can. I was thinking about whether I could do it or not, but I'm going to have to maybe wait until I've had a few more shows under my belt.
Okay.
Yeah. So, dog voice, I want to hear it. Everybody wants to hear it. It's a rainy day. It was snowing today. We need to hear those wacky dog voices. And don't worry, you are not alone.
You can use a fake name as well.
Yes, definitely.
Don't worry.
Okay, so this week I am going to, we've got a new sort of aspect of the show, which I'm excited about, which is a breed highlight. So every once in a while, I'm going to pick out a breed to talk about and just give everybody some information, some interesting historical information about that breed so that we can learn about all the different types of dogs. Understanding breeds and breed groups and what your dog, even if your dog's a mixed breed, they still have those breed characteristics that can show for sure. So understanding what your dog's, what was your dog bred to do will help you to understand why they react to different situations. Because just based off of genetics, a terrier is going to react differently than, let's say, a border collie, which is the breed this week. I'm going to talk about border collies. Terrier is much different. You know, Scottish Terrier, much different from a border collie, which is much different from a poodle, which is much different from a Shih Tzu. So understanding what the dogs were bred to do, the history is really interesting because every breed has their story and every breed exists now intentionally. So breeders, you know, really good breeders work and are very conscientious about sort of preserving the integrity of the breed. So I'm going to talk about border collies today. And I'm getting my information from the American Kennel Club website because I figure they're probably the most accurate and reputable source. So you can go to akc.org if you want to look up your breed. If you have a suggestion for me for a breed to highlight in the future, feel free to send me an email at julie@sensitivedog.com. And go ahead and send me an email and let me know what breed you'd like me to feature, and I will be happy to do that. julie@sensitivedog.com. So the border collie was actually, looks like, was introduced by Queen Victoria, who saw her first collie and in the second half of the 19th century and became an active enthusiast of the breed. And this is where it says that the divergence between our modern collie and the traditional shepherd's dog began. The border collie has remained a true working animal with very little change from the original type. Understanding what breeds were sort of intended for will help you also if you're looking for a dog, whether you're looking for a purebred or through a purebred rescue or through a shelter. Understanding, even if it's a mixed breed, like I said, those dogs will have the drive of the breeds that they are. So understanding what the breed was bred to do will help you to kind of gauge whether it's a good fit for you, energy level, activity level, intensity, that kind of thing. Border collies, as with most, if not all, herding dogs, have an amazing work ethic. They were bred to work all day. And as opposed to other breed groups, we're bred to really work with people. So a lot of teamwork. If they, you know, they're bred to guard and herd flocks of sheep and goats and cattle and you know, livestock in general. So these dogs were bred to, with the ability to work long days out in rugged terrain. And as a result of this selective breeding, the border collie developed a unique working style of gathering and fetching the stock, the livestock, with large sweeping runs. So then once they sort of gather them together, then they control them with a very intense gaze, which I was able to witness actually at the Seattle Dog Show. There was a border collie, which I think I mentioned in a previous show, herding some ducks as a demonstration. So once they kind of gather them together, they then control them with an intense gaze known as eye, which is coupled with a stalking style of movement. And it's amazing that these dogs can be so intense on these animals and yet not click into their prey drive and cause any harm. So that's really where that teamwork and willingness to listen to the human handler as far as, you know, getting direction comes in. Border collie actually got its name because it originated in the border country between Scotland and England. First classified as a Scotch sheepdog. And the breed has been around as we know it today for more than 100 years. And like I said, was brought on by Queen Victoria, who spotted a border collie and became an active enthusiast. So something to understand about herding breeds in general is that they're very smart and they need jobs to do all the time. So if you're going to get a herding breed, make sure that this is a dog that you want to do a lot with. This is the kind of dog that you do agility with. You can take them herding, lots of obedience training. They're so, so smart and they pick up commands so fast. It's really, really quite impressive. The flip side challenge to that is that, you know, you can show them something five times and they've got it. And then they're like, all right, well, what's next? So you've got to be have the energy and the willingness and interest to keep these dogs stimulated intellectually and to make sure that they also just get physical exercise. Those two things are really, really important. Those two things are really important no matter what kind of dog breed you have, that they are physically and intellectually stimulated. But especially if you're getting a herding dog like a border collie that is bred and has been selectively bred for a long time to be able to work all day and to think while they work all day, that's an intense dog. So their capabilities are amazing, but just make sure that you're up for that challenge, because if you're not, then that energy has to go somewhere. And I mentioned to a caller last week who was talking about her little dog. Dogs need an outlet for their energy, and if there's not a constructive outlet, they will find a destructive outlet, which could be chewing or barking or aggression or anxiety. So you don't want to manifest itself in unhealthy ways. So making sure that you've putting some structure in place for those dogs who really need that stimulation, so that they kind of don't go crazy. So there's a place down in Roy, Washington called Utopia, which is EWE, like you as in sheep, Topia. And that's, I think the website is utopia.com, and you can actually go down and bring your dog and take them herding. So if you have a herding breed, especially, that's a great place to go when you have the time, take a chunk of your day and take your dog down and, let them at it with the sheep. Of course, under a controlled, safe environment. And I will hopefully have those folks on in a future show to talk a little bit more about what they do there. So, breed feature, really important to understand what your breed was bred for. In my obedience classes, it's always part of the first week's homework to research your breed and find out what they were bred for. A lot of people don't know, like a Rottweiler, for instance, is a herding dog. So they have a lot of herding instinct, and that might explain some behaviors that people see. Typically, people don't think of a Rottweiler in the same group as a Border Collie or Australian Cattle Dog or Australian Shepherd or something like that. So you might find some information that you didn't know before, and it might help you explain your dog's behavior a little bit. So I highly encourage you to do that. AKC.org is a great resource for that. You can also look at other websites online, breed groups. Just be careful about, breed enthusiasts may at sometimes be a little biased when talking about breeds. So it's good, as always, I think with online stuff and research, it's a good idea to get multiple resources or kind of cross-reference things. So we're going to go to a break, and then when we come back, we will talk with Dawn Gregory with 4-H. You're listening to the Dog Talk Show on Alternative Talk 1150.
Armadillo Consignment is Seattle's only consignment store that uses an automatic markdown system. The longer it stays, the less you pay. Stocking only ready-to-use, value-priced, moderate-to-high-end furniture, clothing, and housewares, Armadillo Consignment has over 3,500 items in the store. Located in Seattle's Broadview neighborhood on the corner of 125th and Greenwood, Armadillo Consignment has great deals on quality, gently used items. Visit armadilloconsignment.com for more information. Armadillo Consignment. The longer it stays, the less you pay.
This is Julie Forbes, dog training, behavior, and nutrition specialist and owner of Sensitive Dog, thoughtful guidance for you and your dog. If your dog needs basic obedience training, a behavior evaluation, or food consultation, I can help you. Call me at 206-372-7399 or visit my website, www.sensitivedog.com. I teach group obedience classes, in-home lessons, and evaluations, and a two-week intensive training program called Higher Education. Again, I'm Julie Forbes, Seattle's dog behavior training and nutrition specialist. www.sensitivedog.com.
Hi, I'm Vicki St. Clair. I want to invite you to join me every Monday at noon for Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. We'll talk with innovative business leaders, medical and health professionals, authors, filmmakers, adventurers, and ordinary people leading extraordinary lives. Join me Mondays at noon for Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair.
Monday, April 6th, it's a conversation with six-time Grammy Award winner Jay Warner, one of the foremost experts on music and author of Notable Moments of Women in Music.
Check out our guest schedule at conversationslive.net and join me Mondays at noon.
The Barking Lounge is Seattle's premier dog daycare and overnight boarding facility. With 24-hour supervision dedicated to the health and well-being of your pooch, it's no wonder why the Barking Lounge was voted best doggy daycare in Western Washington. New customers can mention this ad and receive a free temperament test and day of play care, a $44 value. Offer available for a limited time, valid for new customers only, and has no cash value.
Open your ears, open your heart, open your mind. Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
Hi, welcome back to the Dog Talk Show. I'm your host, Julie Forbes, and today we have a guest, Don Gregory, who is here with us today to talk about 4-H and the dog programs that they have through 4-H. Hey, Don.
Hi.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
So I am excited to talk to you about this to share the information with listeners and also to learn more for myself about 4-H. And just to remind people, if you have a question for Don at any time during this interview, feel free to give us a call. The number is 425-373-5527. That's 425-373-5527. Or toll free in Western Washington, 888-298-5569. So Don, first of all, what does 4-H stand for?
It stands for Heart, Hands, Health, and Head. And the 4-H pledge pledges that you will use all of those elements to make your life better for yourself, for your community, for your club, and for your world. Mm-hmm. So the kids try to use all of those elements and incorporate through life skills in order to better themselves and their community, things like that.
Mm-hmm. So that was hearts, hands, health, and head.
Uh-huh.
Well, that's nice. And what's the age group for kids to participate?
4-H is actually patterned off of the school year. So it kind of follows the school year. We start in October, you know, we kind of rev up for our new year. And kids that are school age are eligible to participate in 4-H. So kindergartners start in, and then they're done after their senior year of high school, although depending on where their birthday may fall into the year, some kids are able to incorporate another year after high school into 4-H. Okay. But a lot of kids are going to college or whatnot by then, so that doesn't always work out for them, too.
Yeah. And you said that the 4-H programs are sort of, not sponsored by, but sort of run through the state's agricultural college?
Yes. Yep. It was developed during the turn of the century many, many years ago during the Land Management Acts, and kind of got incorporated in through each state's agricultural programs. The state universities kind of oversee a lot of the agricultural new information. A lot of the scientific things that come out agriculturally come through the universities. So 4-H is kind of wrapped up in that, and it's through the extension that they call that. So Washington State University's extension program, 4-H, is rolled in through that.
Mm, okay. And so 4-H involves all different types of animals. So it's not, is it primarily agricultural, or is it, do you have, like, what different types of animals and programs do you have?
Well, at this stage of game, 4-H actually is run by any interest that a youth has, and 4-H will incorporate a learning program, a 4-H year, so to speak, around anything that kids are interested in. It did start and develop around agriculture, but nowadays, you know, the kids are doing computers with 4-H. They're into electronics. There's motocross 4-H. In my county, Snohomish County, there's a huge motocross organization that's vibrant and doing very, very well. We just developed an archery program that came in recently that's getting a lot of real great buzz. Kids are very much enjoying that. So really, whatever kids are interested in, they can do independent study through 4-H. It actually complements the homeschooling environment very, very well. So anything that the kids are trying to learn and develop any skills through homeschooling, 4-H will help them develop a curriculum for that.
Oh, wow. So it's not just animals. I thought
not at all.
Oh,
not at all.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
So tell us about what dog-related things, what dog-related programs are through 4-H.
Primarily, our state, Washington State, has two programs that run around dogs. One is our general dog care program, which most of the kids are involved in that. We do have a little satellite program that is for service dogs, kids that are raising service dog puppies, guide dog puppies, or service dog puppies. It's a little bit of an offshoot on that program, and we try and run them a little separately because the needs of the kids and what their agenda is for their dogs are a little bit different. But primarily, the kids, you know, do general dog care. They learn how to do basic obedience with their dog. They also have to learn how to do showmanship, which is what you see at the dog shows when everybody's fluffed and puffed and gating around the ring and exhibiting their breed. So the members learn how to do that. They have a dog knowledge aspect incorporated throughout the program that they use for various levels, but primarily the kids are required to do some sort of a judging and evaluating criteria throughout the year that incorporates their dog knowledge.
Mm-hmm. So the kids are judged, or they learn how to judge?
They learn how to judge.
Oh, okay.
So they learn about breeds. They learn about structure as far as the dog parts and the dog bones and things like that. They'll learn some other dog knowledge depending on their age and skill level. Within there, they may have to learn a little bit about the AKC or some health questions or whatever, and those kind of vary according to, like I said, what we think their age and their skill level, their knowledge level will be. But they do have to incorporate that into the program throughout the year while they're learning the other things about dog care.
Mm-hmm. And do the kids typically or always participate with their own family pet?
Usually they do. A lot of times they'll start with a family pet. Brother and sister may even share a dog coming into the dog program. But generally after the kids get involved in the program, they get a little bit more skilled as far as training and showing. It's not uncommon for the family to find themselves with a new dog that the 4-H'er is mostly responsible for now and has brought up their own project. We call it a project, you know, for lack of a better word, for the kids. So that does happen. And sometimes kids start getting into the AKC genre. They start showing their dog in AKC, and they'll meet professional handlers and start working with them and learning how to exhibit a variety of different breeds, or they'll start working with breeders and start really getting into the more professional aspect. And so a lot of times they'll start accumulating dogs through that way too and getting some pretty fancy dogs to work with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, at the dog show, the Seattle Dog Show a few weekends ago, I did see quite a few young, very young handlers.
Yes.
And so is there an age, are they in their own class as far as, you know, if you're a certain age, you can compete with other handlers in your age bracket, or are they kind of in with everyone else?
Generally, 4-H and AKC as well, we do try and keep the kids categorized by age.
Mm-hmm.
There are some things in the 4-H program that we will classify them according to skill level, so that kids that have a little bit more advanced training don't necessarily have to compete against somebody that's just learning that skill. But for the most part, we try and keep it age-based as far as their competition across lines, that they're really competing with people of their own age group.
Mm-hmm. And so what are the – well, talk a little bit about what the you know, what you see the kids really getting out of – participating in the programs.
Oh, good. My favorite thing to talk about. Well, I see, actually. I've been doing 4-H as a leader. I'm one of the program leaders for the dog program in our Snohomish County 4-H program, and I've also had a 4-H club for about 15 years. I was a youth member in the dog program as well many, many years ago. Mm-hmm. And I see different things as an adult running the program, certainly as I did as a youth involved in 4-H, but particularly with the dogs, we're trying to encourage our kids to develop real good life skills, sense of responsibility, sense of community, just being consistent, and self-discipline, of course, is a big thing that we always want our youth to start learning. And I think that the kids really get that through their dogs. They look at their dogs as more of a project sometimes, a training project or a showing project, but it's really a 24/7 responsibility that they have. They have a lot of things that go on inside the home day-to-day basis that they get to incorporate, you know, just those general responsibility skills with planning, setting goals is a great thing, and the dogs just kind of help facilitate that, because not only do they respond to kids very well, of course the dogs are always willing to do whatever the kids want to do, they're up for anything, but they don't always, you know, meet the goals, or they're not always in on the same agenda necessarily as the kid is, and so kids kind of have to regroup and reevaluate constantly with the dogs and really be more in the moment and on time and be realistic. And a lot of times I like to say with my kids in the club is, you know, the dogs are always gonna, you know, tattletale on them when they haven't fulfilled their responsibilities.
Yeah.
Working with them and training with them and all of that, because the dogs are always going to tell the truth.
Yeah.
It's always going to show. And so it keeps kids really honest and in the moment. And a lot of times I talk to parents, you know, when we're working with kids, you know, the frustration level that comes with teaching youth how to be a trainer. I know you're a trainer as well. Mm-hmm. So the importance of that positive feedback is so important for the dogs, and the timing and all of that is so important. But kids are a lot like that as well. Well, they need that initial positive response back, not only from the program, but from the dog too. So the training and the working together and all of that with the kids and the dogs, it just works really, really well together, because so much of the needs of both are so intertwined that I see the youth are able just to grow with the dog program in ways that I think is unique to 4-H. It's, you know, we have kids that are doing sewing projects or cooking projects or cows, as you were talking about earlier, the cow project. And those projects, I don't think, keep the kids as on task and as interested in developing as well as a dog will. Almost like therapy dogs all the time.
Well, let's hold that thought, because there's definitely more I want to talk about that. We're going to go to a break, and we're talking with Don Gregory with 4-H, and you're listening to the Dog Talk Show on Alternative Talk 1150.
Camley Electric Incorporated is a full-service electrical contractor. From simple home repairs to full remodels, new construction, and small commercial projects, our qualified electricians do it all. We pride ourselves on our workmanship and professional standards, delivered with value in mind. Located in historic Ballard, Camley Electric serves the greater Seattle metropolitan area. Licensed, bonded, and insured. Camley Electric welcomes all inquiries about your electrical needs. Visit the website KemleyElectric.com. That's K-E-M-L-Y Electric.com.
When was the last time you caught your dog eating a stalk of wheat or corn? Evolved as carnivores, your dog is designed for protein in the form of fresh meat, not the grains that fill conventional pet foods. Bursting with fresh, free-run chicken and turkey, wild-caught fish, local fruits, vegetables, and botanicals, Origin mirrors the foods nature intended your dog to eat. Family-owned and operated since 1985, the Origin mission is clear. Biologically appropriate foods from fresh, never-frozen, regional ingredients. Origin Pet Foods, the diet nature intended.
Do you have legal questions? Need to know where to turn?
Hi, this is Rick Gregrick, your host of Northwest Legal Compass.
Northwest Legal Compass will address your questions on a variety of legal topics, including estate planning, asset protection, real estate and business planning, and more. The legal and accounting staff of Gregrick and Associates are dedicated to providing you with superior legal and tax services. Their integrated counsel is geared to the achievement of your goals.
Visit us on the web at rjglegal.com.
Be sure and tune in every Tuesday and Thursday, 3 to 4 p.m.
Urban Beast. Fresh, modern, fun. Seattle's destination for all your pet needs. Located in the South Lake Union neighborhood at 217 Yale Avenue North, directly across from the REI flagship store. Urban Beast features unique accessories such as toys, beds, collars, leashes, and more. They have a great assortment of healthy food and yummy treats for the pets you love. Open 7 days a week and offering free parking in the Alley 24 garage. Come see what the Beast is all about.
More talk, less rock. Come on, that's a good thing. Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
Welcome back to the Dog Talk Show. I'm your host, Julie Forbes, and you are listening to Alternative Talk, 1150. And we have on Don Gregory with 4-H. And welcome back, Don.
Thanks.
So we were actually just... something sort of blew wide open for me during the break when we were talking. So I'm excited to get into that, a program that's sort of related to a guest we had on earlier. But we were talking about the mindfulness and the patience and the presence that is required in training a dog. And, you know, as far as, you know, timing of the communication and letting the dogs know when they've made a right choice, when they've made a wrong choice. It has to be so well timed in the moment, because that's how they understand it. And you were saying that it's similar with the kids, that
yeah.
they need to kind of be, you know, coached as, you know, similarly in letting them know, you know, when they're doing a good job, or coaching them in a way where they can maybe adjust what they're doing to be more effective.
Yes.
And, I mean, I think that that's, you know, that's kids probably different a little bit timing wise for adults. But I've noticed that even just in working with adults and their dogs, because, you know, everyone says isn't dog training mostly people training? And I mean, it's at least half of it, I'd say. Because, you know, it's certainly a place where the dogs need to be worked with, especially if there's a behavioral issue or something like that. But in order for it really to be successful long term, you've got to get the people up to speed as well, so that they can, you know, continue with the work and know what to do. And it's just a really interesting experience. And a part of my job that I love is really working with people in that in that intimate relationship that they have with their animal.
Yeah. I tell a lot of my families when they join the program, you know, we set down a lot of goals and things like that, and I let everybody know that it really is going to be that first year of them introduced to the 4-H program, that the kids are going to learn much more than the dogs are, because the kids have to learn how to become dog trainers before the dogs really are going to learn very much.
Yep.
And it can be real frustrating for folks when, you know, they come in expecting that, you know, we're going to join 4-H and the kids are going to train the dogs and it's going to be great and everybody's going to be happy. But there's a definite learning process that has to happen first before the dogs come along. The dogs are usually pretty wise to the kids before they come in.
And
so the kids have some catching up to do sometimes.
Yeah, and even some undoing in some cases.
Yes, exactly.
And that, you know, that portion of it, that potential for frustration in working, because, and I tell people a lot this, especially at first, is that it's don't worry so much about what the dog does. Be present to what you're doing. Because that's where you need to focus on first. Dogs will usually just fall into place once their environment is set up in a way that it's conducive to them learning and things are put in a way that they understand. That's kind of the easy part. It's the, you know, kind of creating the environment, working with the handler. And you told me over break that there's that, because I had asked you if you had heard of Prison Pet Partnership Program, which is down in the Women's Correctional Facility in Purdy. We had the director of that program on, I think, on our third show. And that's just a fabulous, fabulous program where the offenders actually work with the animals and train them. And you said that 4-H actually has a similar program at a youth facility. So why don't you tell us about that?
Well, it's at Echo Glen, which is a facility for youth offenders. Mm-hmm. And it is being run by a gal that's also involved in the Snohomish County Dog Program. She's been a longtime 4-H leader and program leader, excellent dog person, works well with kids, and incorporated a program up there, I would say maybe 7 years ago. She mm-hmm. calls it Canine Connections. And she took the 4-H philosophies of just youth development, personal development, goal setting, just using the curriculum that 4-H has kind of established and blended it with the principles that they try and incorporate up there with the offenders and the counseling kind of aspect of it. And they take dogs that are on so-called death row. They use shelter mm-hmm. dogs. Mm-hmm. They get them in, and over an 8 to 10 week course, they rehabilitate the dogs. They teach them how to behave and make it out in the real world, so to speak. They do some grooming and you know, makeovers as far as that goes, and then they readopt them out into the community. So the parallels and the segues that youth are getting as far as their plight in life and the dog's plight in life and the things that they have to accomplish in order to make it out in the world and some behavioral issues that they have to face about themselves. And the parallels are so mind-boggling. And you know, my girlfriend and I, we sit down and we'll talk about some of these cases that are going on, and she'll kind of let me in on little details of it, and I almost end up crying every time we talk about it, because they're just so heartwarming, and how 4-H really makes such a huge difference in her program.
Well, and for the, you know, for the young, now, are these just female youth, or is this male and female?
They're co-ed, both boys and girls. Mm-hmm. She has some kids up there that are hardened gang, you know, real hard cases. Mm-hmm. And the fact that they're really using achievement goals, 4-H has levels of achievement that are available for them to pursue. They have tangible awards that are given to them as mm-hmm. far as ribbons and pins. They do a lot of record keeping, and we're real fond of that in 4-H and keeping good records mm-hmm. and following our goals with our project. Mm-hmm. And just the acknowledgement on just such detailed levels of what their goals are and what they're doing today, and that acknowledgement that they're getting. And it's kind of coming from the outside world as well, because they're enrolled in the county 4-H program, so they're earning awards. They don't necessarily get to leave the facility to accept their awards, but mm-hmm. they do enter exhibits up at the fair. Mm-hmm. They enter photography exhibits at fairs. They usually do some sort of an arts and crafts project that's dog-related, so that gets to be entered into the dog barn as one of their projects throughout the year. And they enter a phenomenal little scrapbook every year. They put something together that is just wonderfully put together. You can tell all the hard work that they've done all year long is put into that. So the community at large gets to recognize them back up at the facility. And mm-hmm. I know how much that means to those youth up there mm-hmm. Because, you know, I don't think that they, before this program was given to them, have that sense mm-hmm. of community.
Yeah. So we have a caller with a comment for you, Dawn. So we have Darcy on line one. Hi, Darcy.
Hi.
Welcome to the Dog Talk Show.
Thank you.
So do you have a comment or question
for
Dawn?
Yeah, I did. Hi, Dawn.
Hi.
Hi. I was just so touched by what you're talking about, and I just wanted to really thank you for what you do. As a 4-H leader, I was in 4-H when I was younger with horses. Mm-hmm. And if being a 4-H leader now is anything like it was when I was younger, I know that 4-H leaders don't get paid, and they spend a lot of time doing what they do, and I'm sure that you have a family and work and on all of those things. I just, it's such a commitment. It's such a great thing that you do, so I just wanted to comment on that.
Well, thanks. I feel like I get back tenfold what I give.
I am sure.
I really do.
Yeah, I bet. And, you know, I haven't thought about much about the fundamental aspects that I learned in 4-H as a kid until I was just listening to you speak. And as an adult in my early 20s, I went on to get a degree in health psychology, which looks at human beings from a very holistic perspective and mental health from a holistic perspective. And I'm thinking, wow, you know, so much of these values that I learned as a child really motivated me to move on with psychology as I have as an adult. And so it was just a really interesting parallel to make and how much the fundamental aspects of 4-H really shaped me, and I didn't really think about that until now. So,
yeah. Well, I do talk a little bit to the families too about, you know, when we're talking about the judging, where they have to do the evaluating and learn how to be the judge. And basically, what we're asking the members to do is to start that critical thinking using their head and to really evaluate based on criteria that are given to them on a, you know, whatever the situation at hand is, but to start asking 7-, 8-, 9-year-olds to really use those critical thinking skills and apply them, I think it's just a wonderful thing to start doing. And a lot of the, just like you, a lot of the members I talk to, kids that grow up, and I find them years later, and they can't believe how many of those just little elements have come back into their play, into their lives.
Yeah. Oh man, it's quite amazing.
They thought it was all about dogs. They thought it was all about horses. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. And it really, you know, critical thinking was a big one. And then, you know, it really taught me how to compete, be competitive well. And I mean, I had to, you know, 4-H kids have to learn how to work together, and also in an environment where you're competing with one another, working together outside of the show ring, and then, you know, competing together inside of the show ring, which really, I think, has helped me with just human relationships as a whole.
Yeah.
So it's phenomenal.
It really is. It really is. And you know, the horse program and the dog program have a lot of that, where you're really working with an animal that you're very closely bonded with.
Yeah.
And I tell the kids all the time, especially with the obedience part of it, you know, because you never know if that sit's going to be right when you need it to be.
Mm-hmm.
But I say, if your dog knew how important it was for you, you know, he would do it perfect every time. And so the kids kind of have that little buffer of that competition, you know, they have that little animal there that helps, you know, kind of soften the blow if it
mm-hmm.
doesn't go quite right. And so, I, you know, it's nice, you know, for them to learn that competition and challenge themselves, but there's always that little safety net of that pet or that beloved animal
mm-hmm.
to kind of soften it for them. And I really appreciate that about 4-H.
Oh, yeah. All right. Well, thank you again, and I'm really enjoying the show.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for your call, Darcy.
You're welcome. Bye.
All right, bye. All right. Well, we're going to take a break, Dawn. We'll be right back with Dawn Gregory with 4-H. You're listening to the Dog Talk Show on Alternative Talk 1150.
Urban Beast. Fresh, modern, fun. Seattle's destination for all your pet needs. Located in the South Lake Union neighborhood at 217 Yale Avenue North, directly across from the REI flagship store. Urban Beasts features unique accessories such as toys, beds, collars, leashes, and more. They have a great assortment of healthy food and yummy treats for the pets you love. Open 7 days a week and offering free parking in the Alley 24 garage. Come see what the Beast is all about.
This is Julie Forbes, dog training, behavior, and nutrition specialist, and owner of Sensitive Dog, thoughtful guidance for you and your dog. If your dog needs basic obedience training, a behavior evaluation, or food consultation, I can help you. Call me at 206-372-7399 or visit my website, www.sensitivedog.com. I teach group obedience classes, in-home lessons, and evaluations, and a two-week intensive training program called Higher Education. Again, I'm Julie Forbes, Seattle's dog behavior training and nutrition specialist. www.sensitivedog.com.
Commune with the Pop Oracle on the Radio 8 Ball Show. I'm Andras Jones, the host of the Radio 8 Ball Show, where we answer your questions by picking songs at random and interpreting them as the answers, like picking musical tarot cards. That's the Radio 8 Ball Show on Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
Don't miss the Radio 8 Ball Show, Fridays at noon, right here on Alternative Talk, 1150.
Are you suffering from neck pain, back pain, headaches, or numbness and tingling? At Favreau Chiropractic, you have the opportunity to experience healthcare's leading form of spinal rehabilitation that has been proven to relieve pain and permanently realign your spine. Located in Seattle's Madison Valley neighborhood, Favreau Chiropractic offers a comprehensive service that goes far beyond cracking your back. Visit www.favchiro.com or call 206-726-9595. That's favchiro.com, a different approach to chiropractic.
Alternative to what? Alternative to everything else out there on the radio. Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
All right, welcome back to the Dog Talk Show. I'm your host, Julie Forbes, and you're listening to Alternative Talk, 1150. So if you have a question for Don Gregory with 4-H, give us a call, 425-373-5527, 425-373-5527, or call toll-free in Western Washington, 888-298-KKNW. So we were talking about, before our caller, about the Echo Glen program, and so can you sort of just recap that part of it, Dawn, and then talk a
sure.
bit about that program?
Sure. So it's a small group up there of about 10 kids that are involved in the program at a given time. And as I said, they're all enrolled in the 4-H program. So mm-hmm. they follow the 4-H curriculum. They follow the 4-H year. And they incorporate some of the other more serious principles that they're learning for their rehabilitation in through that, and they match it with the dogs. They use words like patience and persistence a lot with each youth up there, and so they're able to kind of use those same dog training principles as well, and incorporate the patience and persistence as you talked about earlier with the kids. So the match of just the whole approach to behavior and managing behavior and changing behavior works very, very well. It's very well matched.
Mm-hmm. The part I think that just really, I mean, touches me down to my core is thinking about how the kids, and then in the adult programs as well in prisons, you know, how they, the experience, the healing experience that takes place in taking a very highly social animal like a dog who, you know, is coming from a shelter, so is essentially
yeah.
homeless.
Yeah.
And working with that animal to heal the animal and to
Absolutely.
Teach, you know, to modify behaviors and to educate the animal and to have that kind of successful experience, and for the kids and the adults in the program to have the opportunity to experience themselves as teachers and healers.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
and then to, you know, to sort of have that as far as building confidence and, you know, mm-hmm. just sort of having a taste of what their potential is. And then also, you know, well, gosh, if the dogs can make it, you know, so maybe I can too.
I?
Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And one story that I remember, just little tidbits about hearing, was about a youth that was, like I said, hardened gang youth that was up there. And the counselors approached Joe, the friend of mine that runs a program up there, about having this particular kid in her program. And she was a little leery about letting him enter her program because he had a history of animal abuse. That was part of his reason for being incarcerated, was he had been abusive to animals. And they decided to go ahead and let him in because nothing was working. He was getting so many problems inside the housing facilities that they had in the classrooms. Nobody could get this youth to conform at all to their program and to do anything that was beneficial for him. So she paired him up with a breed that she knows very well, which is a Chesapeake Bay Retriever. She said that this dog was from the shelter, smelly, if you know the breed, how they have that just odorous, smelly hair, and just really a nasty looking dog. But she also knows the breed and how loyal they can be, how bonded they get. So she partnered this dog up with this young man and talked to him about the loyalty of this dog and how this breed will really bond to him. And she used words that she knew would matter to him as a gang member, things that would really touch him. And to make a long story short, you know, he was really hesitant to let this dog into his life, but he got this dog on a level. He understood the needs of this dog on a level that she hadn't really even anticipated. And this dog changed him so much that within a couple weeks of him working with this dog, he had no infractions at all within the housing, within the classroom, within any place in the facility. He was willing to make goals, meet goals, match goals, and really just kind of used a lot of what he internalized of what the dog's needs were, and he got it, and how that was for him as well. And just stories like that that come out of this program where the kids really see themselves through the dog's eyes is just so incredible. And it just touches you in a way that is just overwhelming sometimes.
And I'm sitting here just with full body goosebumps.
Yeah, it really does.
And you know, and just the for probably because of what he's been through, that he was probably able to reach that dog in a way that, you know, on a deep, deep, deep level that you know probably can't even articulate. And so for him to just be able to experience that beautiful part of his humanity.
Exactly.
Is just so wonderful. And then, you know, for the dogs to...
Well, I remember he said something. This is the part that gives you chills, that when he was in the counseling session and they asked him how come, you know, he had changed so much. And he said that when he saw this dog and it was ugly and smelly and horrible, he said that's how he looked at everybody in the world before, when he was a gang member. And if you didn't have the right colors on, he didn't care about you. He would kill you. And he said that's how everybody looked at the dog. And he said that there was a good dog under there. There was a good dog under there that really wanted to come out, that had something to offer. And he said, and I see that now, that everybody's like that. That it's not, it wasn't just that dog, but that dog gave him the ability to see that in the world and change this young man forever. I always say, just by being a silly little dog, all he had to do was his own silly little dog stuff. He didn't have to do anything other than be a dog. And that's the beauty of the dogs in therapy. They just have to be a dog.
Yeah, and just open to, you know, open to the transformation just so naturally.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to try to hold myself together here, Dawn, after your stories.
I know.
Well, I really look forward to getting in touch with the director of that program and learning more about that, and maybe having her on as a guest on the show to talk a little bit more about that. And
I'm sure she would love to
bring people awareness of these amazing, amazing programs that are out there. People doing such amazing work and such good, beautiful things happening.
Yeah. And the kids doing it, and I think that's the element that touches us most is, you know, we talk about the programs at Purdy and how wonderful they are, but really when you add the youth mm-hmm. into that, working with the dog, and you know how much the dog is really making that last bit of difference mm-hmm. for that youth. And that's, you know, with the 4-H programs and all those programs, and seeing the kids really get the benefits of what the dogs and working with the dogs and the value of that, it's such a powerful thing.
That's great. Well, we are out of time. So thank you, Dawn, so much. You're with 4-H, and you can find more about 4-H organization through the Washington State University website.
Yes.
Which is wsu.edu.
Yeah, and then just search 4-H, and a whole list of sites will come up for you to pluck around on.
Okay, great. Thanks so much for being on the show, Dawn. Have a great week. And you were listening to the Dog Talk Show. I'm Julie Forbes on Alternative Talk 1150.